We're going to build the wall, folks. We're going to build it. Don't worry. We're going to build the wall. That wall will go up so fast, your head will spin. And you'll say, you know, he meant it. And you know what else I mean? Mexico is going to pay for the wall.
My mother was one of the biggest BS artists that I've ever encountered in my entire life. And whenever she wanted to put a little emphasis on something, she would use exactly the phrase that Trump used there. Your head will spin so fast your head will spin. I will kick you out of my house so fast your head will spin. So to me, when I hear that, I know what I'm hearing. I'm hearing a BS artist. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 173. My name is Melvin. Thank you so much for being here. Today I want to cover immigration. I want to talk about the walls. And in my final thought, I want to point out how everything you know is wrong. But let me begin here. Hillary Clinton once asked, "So, Donald Trump, you're going to build a wall. Are you going to build the wall high enough so that it keeps out the internet?" We live in a much different world than we did at one time, with this respect. The wall, though a physical thing and a symbol, may seem like it's going to do something, but when you consider the way we communicate, when you consider the way we travel, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's a 10th century idea in a 21st century world. But building a wall between Mexico and the United States is not going to stop U.S. immigration. Now, when Trump presents this initiative, he doesn't mention the fact that the U.S. has already completed 651 miles of a border fence. Are you aware of that? There is already something that resembles a wall down on the border. Now, it doesn't cover the whole 2,000 miles, but it does cover 651 miles. Now, in the places where it is not built, it is because it is not environmentally feasible or physically feasible to do so. Deep valleys and things of that nature. The border between the United States and Mexico, the southern border, is not just one big piece of flat land. It's got peaks and valleys like anything else in the world does. So there are some places where you can't put that wall. There's even a house down in Mexico that is actually on the other side of where Trump's wall would be if that wall were to be completed, because it's built on a cliff. And this part of the cliff is actually in Mexico. So when that wall went up, it would take that person that lives in the United States and block them out. There's any number of reasons why this won't work. And these are just the ones off the top of my head. But I want to refer to an article in Politico by Michael Dear titled, "The World is Already Full of Walls That Don't Work." And he points out that walls between nations is an utter failure of geopolitical imagination. At best, they offer temporary respite from deeper tensions which usually remain unsolved by separation. At worst, they can exacerbate the problems they were intended to solve. Put simply, walls do not work as a permanent solution to tough problems, which is why walls ultimately fall. In the decade following 9/11, the number of walls built globally doubled, rising to almost 50 today. This new world of walls materialized in response to uncertainties following the breakup of the Cold War order, the emerging war on terrorism, and global migrations caused by violence, persecution, poverty, and hunger. Fences were being erected to keep refugees out of Europe, to keep citizens in North Korea, and to secure territorial gains everywhere. The international geopolitical playbook seemed dominated by one strategy. Whenever two or more opposing forces clash, separate them by building a wall. But these are temporary fixes, necessary when a more comprehensive solution is unworkable.
One, we will begin working on an impenetrable, physical, tall, powerful, beautiful southern border wall. We will use the best technology, including above and below ground sensors, that's the tunnels. Remember that, above and below.
Let's take some of the more famous walls from history. First, the Israel-Palestine conflict. I'm certainly, you've heard about this. It's an ongoing thing. In its postmodern form, the conflict between Palestine and Israel was born during the British Mandate of Palestine following World War I. In 1917, the so-called Balfour Declaration informed Zionists in search of a national homeland that the British government viewed with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for Jewish people. And this battle still continues to this day. Quoting, today, rather than try to forge a lasting peace with an official demarcation of Israel and Palestinian states, Israel is constructing walls around Palestinian occupied territories. Israel claims these walls are to protect its citizens from attack. Palestinians counter that this separation barrier is cover for an Israeli attempt to establish a de facto territorial limit for a future partition between the two states. From a Palestinian viewpoint, the building of walls by Israelis in disputed territory is simply deepening the crisis and pushing a peaceful agreement between the two sides further and further into the future. The wall, in other words, is just adding fuel to the political fire. And as for trying to stop the bloodshed, this past summer we saw a new wave of violence in the region. How about another famous wall? The East Berlin, West Berlin Wall. And I remember this wall particularly because this wall came down in my lifetime and it was a big deal. Back then, we had Ronald Reagan, and conservatives loved him for this. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. They loved him for that. Now, they are collectively cheering for a guy who is saying, put up a big freaking wall. And this is the major shift that you have seen in the Republican Party. Quoting here, at the end of World War II, Germany was divided into East and West regions, reflecting the respective influences of the Soviet Union and the Euro-American alliance. The wall between East and West Berlin was intended to stem the flow of immigrants, but it did nothing to solve the deeper problems that were causing the exodus from East Berlin in the first place. A repressive, authoritarian regime that brooked no dissent and drastically declining standards of living for ordinary citizens who were able to observe the spectacularly successful West German economic recovery simply by looking out their windows. If anything, the wall worked against the Soviet Union because the West turned it into a powerful symbol of communist oppression, especially when East German guards began killing those who were trying to cross to West Berlin. The Berlin Wall remained for 28 years until it fell in 1989. And this brings us to the United States-Mexico Wall. One of the most prominent new walls of the 21st century is the newly erected barrier between the United States and Mexico. I was watching NBC the other night, and one of their reporters was standing in front of this wall, which must be 30 or 40 feet high, and you see it running in either direction behind her, and it's pretty clear that it goes on forever. And she's standing in front of this already existing wall, and talking about how Donald Trump wants to build a wall on the southern border. The optics were absolutely amazing. Over the last 10 years, a total of, as I mentioned earlier, 651 miles of fortifications have been erected, primarily along the land boundary. They consist of vehicle and pedestrian borders, supplemented by high-tech virtual surveillance border. Remember that clip earlier? It's going to have sensors and everything, he says. The 651 miles were regarded as the maximum length of feasible wall building, since in many places the terrain, as I mentioned earlier, was too steep that construction was impossible, and fence construction across reservoirs and other water boundaries was not viable. Has the border wall worked? Did it stop undocumented migration? Well, as it turns out, it's hard to prove if it has. Donald Trump recently visited Mexico, and it's interesting watching him stand there with the Mexican president, who, by the way, is also incredibly unpopular and really stood to really only maybe gain from this visit with this presidential candidate, and stands nothing to lose because he's at like a 20% approval rating. But still, Mr. Trump goes there, and he stands there next to the Mexican president, and he's asked by reporters, did you guys discuss the wall? Is Mexico going to be paying for the wall? And this is where the bully of Donald Trump became crystal clear.
We didn't discuss that.
We didn't discuss who pays for the wall. We didn't discuss.
The two clips I played earlier of Donald Trump were after he came back. When he was down there in Mexico, he was more diplomatic. And when he was asked, he said, hey, we didn't discuss it. We didn't discuss the wall. We're not, I don't know. We didn't discuss the wall. No, we don't know. I don't know. Are they going to pay for it? I don't know. But then when he came home, he began screaming at the top of his lungs, they're going to pay for the wall, and the wall is going up. So he talks so tough about Mexico, who he clearly does not like, until he gets in their presence, and then he's a completely different person. Then, after he's out of their presence, he comes home, and he's a different guy again. Quoting here, this dubious effective physical structure has wreaked havoc, talking about the Mexico border wall, in communities where it is located on both sides of the border. The collateral damage has included the cost of delays, congestion at the border crossings, suffered by trading partners and commuters alike, environmental damage and destruction caused by the construction itself. Interruptions in the daily lives of schoolchildren, families, and friends whose lives depend on daily crossings. The massive impositions of the security apparatus that has turned the border zone into what Arizona residents describe as a police state. And the deep and lasting resentment that the wall has generated in Mexico. Just ask those who live near the wall. A majority of border residents on both sides say they do not want more walls, preferring that money be spent upgrading ports of entry at the border line. The concept of a wall may sound good in political rallies. It purports to identify a source of the country's ills. It plays on fear-driven nativism sentiments, and it recommends action to solve the problem. However, imprecisely, the problem is understood. But if you're looking for effective policy, stay away from building more walls. For centuries, walls have not worked, and ultimately, they have always come down.
Yes, my name is David Grossberg, and I'd like to know, do you think the children of illegal aliens should be allowed to attend Texas public schools free, or do you think that their parents should pay for their education?
I'd like to see something done about the illegal alien problem that would be so sensitive and so understanding about labor needs and human needs that that problem wouldn't come up. But today, if those people are here, I would reluctantly say I think they would get whatever it is that they're, you know, what the society is giving to their neighbors. But the problem has to be solved. The problem has to be solved because as we have kind of made illegal some kinds of labor that I'd like to see legal, we're doing two things. We're creating a whole society of really honorable, decent, family-loving people that are in violation of the law. And secondly, we're exacerbating relations with Mexico. The answer to your question is much more fundamental than whether they attend Houston schools, it seems to me. I don't want to see a whole, if they're living here, I don't want to see a whole thing of 6 and 8 year old kids being made, you know, one totally uneducated and made to feel that they're living with outside the law. Let's address ourselves to the fundamentals. These are good people, strong people. Part of my family is a Mexican.
What a difference 36 years makes. That was George W. Bush running for the Republican nomination in 1980 against Ronald Reagan. He had not yet become Ronald Reagan's vice president after Ronald Reagan secured the nomination that year. And standing on that very stage was none other than St. Ronnie himself. And then the question was posed to him.
Rather than making them or talking about putting up a fence, why don't we work out some recognition of our mutual problems, make it possible for them to come here legally with a work permit, and then while they're working and earning here, they pay taxes here. And when they want to go back, they can go back, and they can cross and open the border both ways by understanding their problems. This is the only safety valve right now they have with that unemployment that probably keeps the lid from blowing off down there. And I think we could have a fine relationship, and it would solve the problem you mentioned also.
I think if that clip were made public between both presidential candidates, there would be no shortage of conservatives that would be looking for Ronald Reagan's grave so that they could relieve themselves on it. Because what a difference 36 years makes. What we have now is a party that is very, very frightened. A party that is clearly out of ideas. So much that they are now depending on nativism, racism, nationalism, and solutions that we know from our history do not work, have never worked, and will never work.
Countless innocent American lives have been stolen. He was murdered by an illegal immigrant gang member previously convicted of burglary, brutally beaten, and left to bleed to death in his home, 90 years old and defenseless. The perpetrators were illegal immigrants with criminal records a mile long, sexually assaulted and beaten to death with a hammer. Her killer had been arrested on multiple occasions, but was never, ever deported, despite the fact that everybody wanted him out. Illegal immigrants and other non-citizens in our prisons and jails together had around 25,000 homicide arrests to their names. 25,000. Dangerous, dangerous, dangerous criminals. There are vast numbers of additional criminal illegal immigrants who have fled.
If there's anything that I have learned from the way the Republicans talk recently, it is this. It is okay for you to commit a crime in this country, whether that be murder, whether that be rape, whether that be robbery. It is okay. The law will deal with you, but it is your God-given right as an American to commit a crime in America. But if you commit a crime and you are in this country without your papers, well, that crime is way, way, way worse, and we need to do something about it. And so the fiction that is being fed to us right now is that there is this gigantic flow of Mexicans just pouring over the border, raping, robbing, and killing. But is it true? Is it true that we are being flooded with these people? Rapists, murderers, as Trump likes to call them. Your answer is this. Simply put, no. No, it's not true. Over the last 8 or 9 years, there has been net negative immigration from the South. Honestly, check this out. This from PewHispanic.org, which is the Hispanic arm of the Pew Research Council. Net loss of 140,000 from 2009 to 2014. Family reunification was the top reason for return. Also, we had a bit of a economic downturn in our country. Quoting here, more Mexican immigrants have returned to Mexico from U.S. than have migrated here since the end of the Great Recession, according to new Pew Research analysis of newly available government data from both countries. From 2009 to 2014, 1 million Mexicans and their families, including U.S.-born children, left the U.S. for Mexico. According to data from the 2014 Mexican National Survey of Demographic Dynamics, U.S. Census data for the same period shows that an estimated 870,000 left Mexico to come to the U.S. and a smaller number than the flow of families from the U.S. to Mexico. There has been a net loss of 140. So dig this. When George W. Bush was president, not George H.W., when George W. Bush was president, we had more illegals in the country at that time, if you want to call it that, than we do now. We actually have less. And the president, President Obama, has implemented a policy of sending them home as soon as they break the law. This was not the way before. And now this is what Trump has adopted, while at the same time simultaneously saying that President Obama is actually letting more of them in. So we're being fed a complete fiction. So we want to dig this, build a wall that will not work and does nothing. Which, when, by the way, there's already a wall on the southern border to keep out the Mexicans that are leaving the country. Trump supporters, Trumpeters, you're being scammed.
My first hour in office, those people are gone. And you can call it deported if you want. The press doesn't like that term. You can call it whatever the hell you want. They're gone. Beyond the 2 million. And there are vast numbers of additional criminal illegal immigrants who have fled. But their days have run out in this country. The crime will stop. They're going to be gone. It will be over.
Quote, for decades, Mexico has been the top source of newly arrived immigrants in the U.S., but with a recent decline in the flow of new immigrants to the U.S. from Mexico and an increase in the number of new immigrant arrivals from China and India, Mexico may no longer be the top source of U.S. immigrants. The U.S. Census Bureau recently reported that China overtook Mexico in 2013 as the leading country for new immigrants. However, under a new measure, Mexico remains the top source of new immigrants, at least for now, according to Pew Research Center analysis of Census Bureau data. So we know that there's already a wall. We know that they're not all coming here, and actually they're beginning to leave. But then who is causing all of the crime? All of the horrible, horrible, no good, very bad, nasty crime that is so bad, people are being robbed and raped and murdered every single day of their lives. And you walk down, what about all this crime? What about all that crime? Is there more crime? And is it being perpetrated by illegal immigrants? Let's knock down another myth. Quoting from Business Insider here, it's incredible how much safer America has become since the 1980s. Quote, even though America's local police are more militarized than ever, the crime rate has been steadily falling for the past two decades. In 2013, the number of murders in America dropped 4.4% to 14,196, down significantly from its peak of 24,703 in 1991. The drop in homicides is even more dubious when you look at the individual cities that once had bad reputations. Take New York City. It is now regarded as one of the safest cities in the world. They recorded 2,245 homicides at its peak in 1990 and only 328 in 2014. Los Angeles had 2,589 homicides in 1982, but only 254 last year. Washington, D.C., a much smaller city, saw its murder number decline from a peak of 443 homicides in 1992 to only 105 last year. Overall, violent crime, including homicide, rape, aggravated assault, and robbery, dropped 38% from 1992 to 2011. Recent declines in rates of violent crime in the U.S. have caught many researchers and policymakers off guard, according to criminology professor Gary LaFrie. These declines were perhaps more surprising in that they came on the heels of dire predictions about the rise of a generation of super predators that was brought to us by the Clintons, who would soon unleash the full force of their destructive capacities on an already crime-weary nation. Crime experts have yet to come up with a unified theory for why America has gotten safer. There was, with that crime bill passed by the Clintons in 94, funding provided for 100,000 new police officers, $6.1 billion. But only about half that many have actually been brought on. So is that the reason for the massive decline? So let's go over this again. Immigrants are coming here, raping, robbing, murdering, blah, blah, blah. And we need to put up a wall to keep them out. A, there is already a wall. B, walls historically never have and never will work. But what about all the crime? Well, crime has been on a steady decline for the last several decades. But what about that old man that was murdered by that illegal immigrant? Crime is dropping. The country is becoming safer. So then why are we hearing so much about the crime and immigration? Because the Republican Party has run out of ideas. They have nothing that they can run on. They can't run against President Obama's economy. They can't run against his ideas. They can't run against his healthcare plan. But they can run on pure, old-fashioned American racism.
I don't consider a bigot just to have to do with race. Bigotry, if you look at the definition, is about someone that's small-minded and sits there and directs hate towards a certain group. Hillary Clinton's speech was all about hate towards a group that, while my fellow counterpart might consider them to be very racist, it's the exact opposite. These are God-fearing, baby-loving, gun-toting, military-supporting, school choice advocating Americans who love this country. And just because maybe there might be some a part of a small fringe group that read Breitbart, by sitting there and saying that the entire website is white supremacy, it's kind of as ridiculous as saying that just because you have people that are anarchists and communists that read the Huffington Post, calling that newspaper establishment, saying that they're pro-anarchy and they're against the United States government.
That's Kellyanne Conway, and I can't help but feel bad for her that she has to back an absolute outright immigrant bashing, white supremacist, racist. But did you hear her? It's very cute listening to her try to squeeze in all those talking points. Oh, they want free school choice and they're Second Amendment. Oh, bless her heart, quite honestly. So all of these lies that are being, and they're flat out lies, we're being lied to by right-wing media, we're being lied to by Donald Trump, we're being lied, right-wing radio, lied to right-wing blogs, right-wing websites, we're being lied to. We already have a wall, and it's not working. Walls historically have never worked. We don't have an immigration problem. We have a net negative immigration problem. They're actually leaving the country. And we don't have a skyrocketing crime rate. But it doesn't matter that Donald Trump is lying, because this kind of racism appeals to the fear, the deep fear that is in a lot of alt-right people, a lot of alt-right conservatives. And even though it's a lie, it still has a real-world effect. There have been any number of stories on the news lately about how schools, kids at school, are being teased and harassed. If they're Mexican, they're being teased with the fact that they're going to be deported by people who do not like them. Recently in my area, somebody at a high school put up a sign that said, "Build the wall." My wife works in a school, and as a part of their training this year, they had to learn how to deal with the racism that is born directly out of Donald Trump's run for president. My wife had to learn how to deal with these kids who are now harassing Latino kids, telling them that they're going to be kicked out of the country as soon as Donald Trump becomes president.
Many of these students uneasy after this banner was put up inside their school. It says, "Build a wall," referencing Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's plan for the U.S.-Mexico border.
Controversy tonight over a display from fans at a Northwest Indiana high school basketball game. Images and chants from the stands stirring claims of racism.
A small group of Elkhorn students chanted racial slurs and things like "Donald Trump, build that wall" at players.
Fans have used the chant to blatantly target the minorities whose parents may be from other countries.
A Fairfax County mom says classmates told her third grader that when Donald Trump is president, her child will be deported.
Lately, it's been just getting worse.
Students don't feel safe. Students don't want to go to school anymore.
Things like Trump, trying to intimidate us with the things that Mr. Trump has said that he's going to do with immigrants.
Honestly, disrespectful. That's how I take it. I hear it all on and off the court, everywhere I go.
This is our school, and this is where we learn. This is our environment. This is our second home. And it's not fair that some of us don't even feel safe coming.
Yes, what Mr. Trump and the Republicans are saying is an outright lie, but it has a very real-world effect, and it's being felt more than anything by our nation's kids, and it is not their fault. They do not deserve this, but as I mentioned before, in a party without ideas, they have to turn to racial politics. And this brings us to voter ID. A number of voter ID laws have been struck down across the nation for the very simple fact, and I've covered this on the show before, that the courts that struck them down said they are clearly racial, clearly meant to keep Latinos away, clearly meant to keep African Americans away. And there's even billboards going up in African American and Latino neighborhoods that say it is illegal to vote. If you are not properly registered, don't even try it. And then there will be a picture of prison and say, "This is where you're gonna go." And they put them up in African American and Latino neighborhoods to keep them away. It's clearly in a party with no ideas, clearly a party running on racism.
Voter ID, what's with that? What's with voter ID? Why aren't we having voter ID? In other words, I want to vote, here's my identification, I want to vote, as opposed to somebody coming up and voting 15 times for Hillary. And I will not tell you to vote 15 times.
Trump's poll numbers are falling. They've tightened up in some places, but by and large, they're still falling. And I'd like to think that part of the reason that he is so incredibly unpopular is because of the racial politics he's running with. He's running on things he has no intention of doing. He's running on things that are impossible to do, and he's running on problems that do not exist.
There is some sunshine in this poll for Mr. Trump, though. The American people have exactly as good of an opinion of Donald Trump as they do of personal injury lawyers. And Donald Trump does beat bed bugs rather resoundingly. Americans prefer Donald Trump to bed bugs by a whopping 22-point margin. Earlier in the campaign, you might remember, he lost to lice. So in this case, him beating bed bugs is very good news for him and his campaign. The bed bugs, for their part, they want a recount.
Has already imported into this campaign a very interesting thing because it's foreign. They have imported the propaganda technique invented by the dictators abroad. Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf, written by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in Hitler's book, and it was copied by the aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood, always a big one, for its very fantastic nature would make it more credible. If only you keep repeating it over and over and over again.
It does not matter if it is not true. Your falsehood will be true as long as it is gigantic, incredibly hard to challenge, and you continue to say it over and over and over again. So here in America, let's talk about the employment picture for a little bit. Employment has been coming back. Wages are a bit low. In my area, we realized this about a year or so ago, that if we were not buying a house, and the important part about buying a house is that you get it locked in at one rate. You pay one monthly rate for 15 or 30 years or whatever it is. And then after you own the house, you only pay the taxes on the house, which are, when you consider what the mortgage is, incredibly low. And so we bought this house at one price. And we just realized that if we did not have this house to live in, say we sold it and wanted to move out, it's incredibly unlikely that we would be able to remain living in this area. We would probably have to move. Buying another house, we'd essentially be priced out of that market. And then, of course, apartments start at around $1,500 for one that would fit our family. And I don't want to move my family into a teeny, tiny place, because I've got a wife and three kids and a couple of cats and a freaking studio where I record music and this show, and I can't lose that. But even though both my wife and I work full time and we're paid better than the average, we probably couldn't afford to keep this up. So even though we are doing well, we're not doing as well as perhaps we need to be to keep up with the gigantic fluctuation in the economy, in the cost of things, namely in the cost of housing. So, as I mentioned earlier, we have a demagogue telling us that folks are coming into this country and stealing our jobs, which we know is not true. But what of those jobs? So, I want to point out a couple of things to you. U.S. immigration law states that you must obtain a visa or permit to enter America. A visa is an official permit authorizing you to enter the USA for a specific reason and a specified period of time. There are two types of visas. Now, this is important. USA visa permit classifications, immigrant and non-immigrant visa. The most common U.S. visa is a non-immigrant visa. This is for someone who intends to come in to the U.S. temporarily for a specific purpose. Typically on an H-1B visa, F-1 study visa, L-1 intercompany visa, K and V finance visas, or fiancé visas, excuse me. An immigrant visa is for someone who intends to relocate to the USA and live and work permanently, and these are the folks with the green cards. H-1B visa, the primary U.S. work visa for professionals and students from all over the world or in the USA who work specialty occupations, valid for up to 6 years. People generally overstay these things. Temporary visa for short-term seasonal work such as hospitality and tourist industries. And then there's green card E3, TN1, L1, E2. But we're going to focus namely on H-1B and H-2B. And these are the most common types of visas that are given out. And they're given out for very specific reasons. And after your visa runs out after 6 years, they don't come looking for you. So for the folks that A, are worried about these Mexicans coming and taking your jobs, employers are accepting these people. Employers are currently lobbying the Congress so that more of these folks can come in here and work. And it's because they want the cheap labor, or they're having trouble finding people to do this kind of work. So Trump is simultaneously saying, we're going to kick them the hell out. But then all the people that are financing his campaign are lobbying Congress to triple and even quadruple the number of H-2B visas for folks that are coming in here and taking American jobs or accepting American jobs. And one of the things that never gets mentioned in all of this, and it's really easy to blame the victim, it's really easy to go after the person who is merely trying to support their family and say, damn them for coming here taking our jobs. But that's not the problem. It's not their fault. They, just like you and I, are just trying to make an honest living. But what about the employers? What about the employers that exploit them? What about the employers that are pushing for more of these H-2B visas and H-1B visas so these folks can come in and do this work at a very low rate? What of these folks? Well, we don't talk about these folks because these folks are the real problem. The employers, it's not the employees, it's the employers. And this is what gets lost every time we have this debate.
One thing that he did not talk much about in this speech, and he really hasn't talked about on the campaign trail, is what to do about those who employ undocumented persons. He calls for mandatory E-Verify, but what's missing is what do you do with the employers? So it's easy to blame the victim. It's easy to blame the immigrants. It's easy to talk about building a wall. It's easy to villainize these folks. But what about the employers who are making a lot of money off of immigrants who they're paying a third, half of normal working wages? But it's a lot easier to go after other folks than his colleagues who are perhaps employing these folks.
In America, it is also very hard to get an education. It's very expensive. It can put you into hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt, and then you may not even get the job. But other countries where the educational standard is a lot higher and education isn't as expensive, well, those countries are now turning out a lot of these tech folks. A lot of the folks that are designing our computers, your cars, and touchscreens, and all the rest. And so the number one visa that is being requested right now is for those folks. This is from Kenneth Raposa over at Forbes. American-based companies from Microsoft to Ernst & Young are known for hiring skilled labor from outside the U.S. on H-1B temporary work visas. Famous names like Bill Gates have been calling for more H-1B visas for years now. Industry leaders at the big outsourcing firms, the vast majority of them Indian, all say that U.S. tech workers don't always have the required skill set. Quote, for us, we hire as much as we can from the U.S., according to Raj Mehta, chief executive of Industries and Markets at Cognizant in Teaneck, New Jersey. Sometimes, though, we have to look elsewhere. So we have the jobs here in America. High tech is the future. But because of the way that we have set up our private for-profit industries, to make money off college education, that has given us less workers that are able to do these high-tech jobs. Now, I found an article at Bloomberg, and it's titled, Why I Hire Undocumented Workers. And it's anonymous from a gentleman who actually hires undocumented workers. And so if you're wondering who's employing them all, this is just one story. Well, this is by Francis Wilkinson. A guy I've known for years is one of these folks. He owns an East Coast landscaping and plant business with around 100 employees, and at least half of whom are undocumented Mexican immigrants. About a dozen years ago, one of his biggest competitors started using undocumented Mexican laborers. At the time, the landscaper's firm suffered high turnover and low productivity in finding employees to do the actual landscaping. His company's bread and butter was difficult. He found that many of the Americans he hired over the years were unreliable and unwilling to do the hard work. Sometimes they quit, and other times he has had to fire them. Gradually, he started hiring Mexican laborers. All of them were able to provide Social Security numbers, though he knew those numbers were bogus. "We have to have paperwork on these guys," he said. We just don't have to be legitimate. The Government Oversight Committee that looks into these things, looks into, you know, whether folks are legally, this is labor and industries, whether folks are legally here and legally working, the money has been stripped away from this, largely by the Republicans who do not want this kind of enforcement going on. See, if you allow these folks in, it drops the amount of money, it drops the labor rate, and it drops the labor rate for everybody by diluting the labor force. And this is something that the Republicans especially tend to like. The Mexican laborers live together in a poor neighborhood in a small city, drive to work together, and take as many hours as the boss offers, and they'll even work 7 days a week when possible. He pays them the same wages he pays Americans, and he says that the Mexicans are making well above the median U.S. wage. He says he pays them $25 an hour. I don't know whether I believe that or not, but it doesn't matter. He says he's paying them more because they work harder. Because they're undocumented and most of them don't have their families with them, the men don't make much of a dent in the U.S. consumer economy. Instead, they send their savings home to their families in Mexico. There are, of course, complications. The landscaper has paid thousands of dollars to coyotes. These are the folks that bring folks into the country, that help smuggle people into the country. He has paid thousands of dollars to coyotes and illegal services to secure passage back to the U.S. for workers who return to Mexico to visit family. If his employees are stopped at the U.S. border and don't make it back to work, which is happening more frequently, he isn't charged. As the business grew, the landscaper's Mexican workforce has also become his recruiting services. The Mexicans are self-policing, it says. If a guy's not working hard, they get rid of him. I don't even have to say anything. The only people I ever have to fire, he says, are Americans. Now, this brings an interesting point about the American and Mexican work ethics. And I am guilty of this as well. Yes, I have done dumpy little jobs, but it's really unlikely. There's any number of things that I'm willing to do. And I suppose if I've got a family to feed, and I didn't way back then, but if I got a family to feed, well, suppose I'll have to do whatever I can, but I would much rather do something else. I would never do a landscaping job. You'd really have to twist my arm. And so what is it about Americans in that respect? So quite frankly, it's ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous to say that these folks are coming here. They're robbing, they're raping, they're killing, they're just taking from the U.S. economy when they're not. They're good, honest people who are just trying to make an honest living, trying to support their families, and they're willing to do things that Americans aren't willing to do. Perhaps, if we were willing to do that work, and you say, but Melvin, that work doesn't pay very well. You're right. A lot of the times it doesn't. But Donald Trump is not the answer here.
The reality of it is he hasn't done anything to help himself in terms of growing the number. And so I think he's done for with the Hispanic community. He's never going to see the White House if he doesn't get a significant portion of the Hispanic vote. I don't know if you guys speak Spanish, but I want you to remember this one word, payaso. Payaso.
I was just saying it that Willie a second ago.
It means clown. Yeah. You know, this guy is a complete clown. I'm really sad for the American people and for the Republican Party. They had an opportunity to put John Kasich, you know, front and center. Instead, they ended up with this payaso. And, you know, it's a complete waste of time. It is a complete waste of time. We need to get on with it already. The nation has got other things to worry about. Immigration reform is a monster that he created so he could slay it. At the end of the day, it's not going to change things for this nation as we move forward here.
That is the president of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and just one of the many Latinos that has been dropping his support for Donald Trump as of late. Back to wages. So wages have been dropping precipitously, yes, and diluting the labor market will help drop wages. But there's another thing that is not being credited with, and this is something that you will not hear on the campaign trail from the Republican for sure, and it's something you also likely will not hear from the Democratic nominee either, and that is about unions. There is a direct correlation in the drop in pay in America that correlates directly with the drop in unionization, even for non-union workers. If you are a non-union worker, unions set the floor. Why? Because they demand better working conditions. They demand days off, holidays, sick leave, better pay, vacations, any and all the rest. And this forces non-union companies to compete in the same way if they want to hold on to their workers. This from the Economic Policy Institute. For men in the private sector who lack a college degree and do not belong to a labor union, real wages today are substantially lower than they were in the 1970s. In the debates over the causes of wage stagnation, the decline in union power has not received nearly as much attention as globalization, technology change, and the slowdown in Americans' educational attainment. Union boost to non-union pay has weakened as the share of private sector workers in a union has fallen from 1 in 3 in the 1950s to about 1 in 20 today. Key findings from their report are as follows. For non-union private sector men, weekly wages would be an estimated 5% or $52 higher in 2013 if private sector union density, the same share of workers in similar industries and regions who are union members, remained at its 1979 level. For a year-round worker, this translates to an annual wage loss of $2,700. For the 40.2 million non-union private sector men, the loss is equivalent to 2.1 billion fewer dollars in weekly paychecks, which represents an annual wage loss of $109 billion. For non-union private sector men with a bachelor's degree or more education, weekly wages would be an estimated 8% or $58 higher in 2013 if union density remained at its 1979 levels. For a year-round worker, this translates to an annual wage loss of $3,016. For non-union private sector men with a high school or less diploma, weekly wages would be around an estimated 9%, $61 higher, if a union density had remained at its 1979 levels. For a year-round worker, this translates to an annual wage loss of $3,172. Non-union workers benefit from a strong union presence in the labor market in many ways. Strong unions set pay and benefit standards that non-union workers employers follow. Those employers may raise pay for some workers to forestall an organizing drive, which leads to an upward adjustment in wages of workers above them to maintain relative pay differentials similar to the effects of minimum wage increases.
The stump in an interview with Donald Trump, the frontrunner on the GOP, has claimed the official unemployment rate is 8 times the published rate. Just this weekend, he told CNN's Don Lemon, quote, "As you know, as people give up looking for jobs, all of a sudden they are considered employed statistically." Well, that's not true. They are not counted as employed. They drop out of the labor market if they're not looking for work. And he has said this.
Don't believe those phony numbers when you hear 4.9 and 5% unemployment. The number's probably 28, 29, as high as 35. In fact, I even heard recently 42%.
All of those statistics are not true. To make it to 42% unemployment, he would have to count every single person who is not working and then some. He would have to count students, the elderly, retirees, stay-at-home moms, stay-at-home dads, people who don't want to work, people who don't have to work, and to some degree, people who have just given up looking.
The problem isn't Mexicans. The problem isn't them stealing our jobs. The problem is not that we don't have a wall. The problem is not higher crime. The problem is not the immigrants. It's us. We demanded a lower standard. We allowed non-unionization to happen. We allow for these employers, for these Republicans, and to a lesser degree, the Democrats, to change the way we are paid, to change our standards of living. We, the American people, have let it go. And I can hear every single day of my life, if you find a conservative and you ask them what they think about unions, they will rip you a new a-hole because they have been fed that same line of crap that unions are the problem. But unions are democracy. Unions are the way that we get stronger wages, better benefits, and a higher standard of living. It is we that have defeated ourselves.
I think foreign observers are troubled by some of the rhetoric that's been taking place in these Republican primaries and Republican debates. I don't think it's restricted, by the way, to Mr. Trump. I mean, I find it interesting that everybody's focused on Trump primarily just because he says in more interesting ways what the other candidates are saying as well. So he may up the ante in anti-Muslim sentiment, but if you look at what the other Republican candidates have said, that's pretty troubling, too. He may express strong anti-immigration sentiment, but you've heard that from the other candidates as well. I'll leave it to you to speculate on how this whole race is going to go.
So I've spent the better part of this last hour, and thank you for spending it with me, debunking all of the lies. And I just wanted to put a nice cherry atop this TFYC peel ice cream that you have been enjoying. There is an article by Monty Fowler, and you can follow him on Twitter at twitter.com/Monty Fowler. I'm sure you can find him on Facebook and all the usual suspects. And he points out, real quick, just let me knock these things down for you. The headline, read this. It's an article. Before you say anything else about taking back America. And that has been probably the largest leg on the Trump three-legged stool. And then, of course, the other one has been, you know, lies and white supremacy. And it goes like this. We don't need to take America back. No one stole it. It's right here. You're sitting in it. Mexico isn't going to pay for the wall. And we're not going to deport millions of people and break up families. If you think either one of these is a good idea, you're not smart and probably not a person I want to hang out with. We don't live in a democracy. Technically, we are a federal republic. But in reality, we are ruled by an oligarchy. Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they have an agenda and they are not fair and balanced in any way, nor are they unbiased. Read newspapers, even online ones. Read lots and lots of opinions from lots of sources and then do this. It's going to hurt, but do it. Think, form your own opinion based on as many facts as your brain can tolerate. Science is real. We know things because of science. Don't be afraid of it. You have an iPhone and a Facebook because of science. Global warming or climate change, as the cool kids call it, is real. Anyone who tells you it is not real is not a smart person and probably should not be dressing themselves or caring for children. Racism is real. And you are probably a little racist and you should work on that. American Christians are not under attack and no one is trying to take your Bible away from you. American Christians are not under attack. American Christians are not being persecuted. They wield so much power in this country that politicians pretend to be Christian just so that we will vote for them. No one is trying to take your Bible away from you. The gay people are not trying to destroy families. We don't need any help from them. Thank you. We do a fine job of that ourselves, so stop saying that we are persecuted. You sound stupid. Poor people need help. If you're not helping them, but complaining about how the government helps them with your money, you are not a nice person. Be nice to the people who teach your children. Don't send them nasty emails or yell at them. Their job is 10,000 times harder than your stupid job. You don't know what Common Core is. Stop complaining about it. You think you do, but you don't, unless you're a teacher. So, stop complaining about math problems using memes on Facebook when you probably couldn't do the math anyway. ISIS is not an existential threat to the United States. We do not need to rebuild our military. It is the hugest, most badass killing machine in the entire world. It is not depleted. Stop being afraid and stop letting politicians and pundits scare you. Guns do, in fact, kill people. That's what they're designed to do. When used as directed, they kill people. If you feel you need a gun to protect yourself in America, you're probably living in the wrong neighborhood and should probably move before you go out and buy a gun. There are like a billion places where you can live where you don't need a gun or to even lock your back door. If you do own a gun, make sure you lock it up and take care of it really, really, really well. And for God's sake, keep it away from your kids. If you are even a little bit unhinged or pissed off, though, you shouldn't have a gun. And I think the Founding Fathers would agree with me on this. Stop being suspicious of American Muslims. The guy sitting next to you in the cubicle at work is probably more of a threat to you than any Muslim, since he has to listen to your uninformed ranting day after day. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, and all the rest, they're just entertainers. Stop getting your opinions from them. Here's where that reading thing will really come in handy. Stop sharing Facebook memes that tell me to share, or else Jesus won't bless me with a laundry basket full of cash. That's not how prayer works, and I don't want money delivered, even if it's from God, in a laundry basket. We are the United States of America, and we can afford to house every homeless veteran, feed every child, take in every refugee, and still have enough money left over for Starbucks and a bucket of KFC chicken. Unless you can trace your family line back to someone who made deerskin pants look stylish and could field dress a buffalo, you are a descendant of an immigrant. Please stop saying that immigrants are ruining our country. Such comments are like a giant verbal burrito stuffed with historical ignorance, latent racism, and xenophobia, all wrapped up in a fascist tortilla. Thank you to Monty Fowler for that. And that is where I'm going to leave this particular hour. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here with me on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Kiwi Station app or the Podbean app. Podbean's great. Or download it from the iTunes Store. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a big thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.